lost to ignorance and confusion, three men arose from humble beginnings with a message of wisdom and hope for their troubled times. Three men who would eventually change the very face of humanity.
So, here are some other guys.
It's Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil.
And good evening, and welcome to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil. This is episode number, are you ready? 211. I just hang around for 4 years. Show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of songwriting. We have brand new songwriters, established professionals. We all share our tips, techniques, but never our toothbrushes and cool things. Hopefully together, I think we're going to learn at least six things tonight. What do you think, Linda? Six? Yeah. At least.
Six or seven.
And everybody gets better at writing songs, even Neil.
Hey.
You can always find us live every Tuesday at 7 o'clock on CJRU 1280 AM. That's right here in Toronto in the local broadcast area. Or if you can't get to a radio, you can listen live on the live stream at songtalk.ca. And a shout out to Janice Ho in Vancouver, who is listening right now, apparently.
Hello, Janice.
Hi, Janice.
Vancouver. She's complaining about the rain, and I said, well, try minus 20. I really feel sad for you.
It's actually beautiful here today, so yeah.
It's 14. I am your host, Bruce Harrett, and joining me tonight, as always, the intrepid members of the Song Talk Radio Action Team, Mr. Phil Emery.
That's me, and I'm really excited to be here, as I often am.
But not always.
Not always.
And Neil Modi.
Good evening. And just a note to Janice. You may be complaining about the rain in Vancouver, but here in Toronto, we get to complain about the lack of Janice.
That is true. Right? We do miss
Janice.
She
asked me, actually, I talked to her on the phone today, and she said, what's different about your show? And I said, well, we just miss you so much. But she wasn't fishing for a compliment at that time.
And just an FYI for our new listeners, Janice used to be, she was our first tweeting songbird.
That's right. Our first team member, actually.
She did social media for us. And she's also a singer-songwriter.
Yes.
But we'll be hearing from her perhaps tonight.
Let's hope.
All right. And bravely managing our social media over there on the side is Linda Lavender. She's doing our social media tonight. And keeping an ever-watchful eye on the board tonight is sitting in for Linda Lavender is Phil Emery.
That's me. I'm doing double duty, yes.
Oh, so he's got two things to do.
Because Vanessa Vreeland's on assignment in Beijing.
Yeah. Beijing?
Yes. Mm.
Wow. Is that like Queen and Spadina area?
No, it's a street in North York.
Oh, okay.
Okay. During the show, join in by sending your comments and questions to @SongTalkRadio on Twitter, feedback@songtalk.ca, that's email, or on Facebook, and we'll share them with the audience in real time as opposed to false time.
Yay.
And please stop by our website, that's songtalk.ca, find out how you can be a guest on our show. Plus, are the lyrics up there tonight?
They certainly are.
Okay, Sean's lyrics, our guest lyrics, are up on the website. So if you're listening to the live stream, just click on shows and just click on our homepage and you'll see the lyrics there.
You can see the lyrics. We're still looking for a plugin that has the bouncing ball.
Okay,
You'll have to bounce yourself. Yeah.
Okay, tonight our guest is Sean Bertram, a young up-and-coming guitarist and singer-songwriter. He's based in Toronto. If the name sounds familiar, it's because he was a guest on Song Talk Radio way back in July 2017, just about 7 months ago.
Mm.
He's now moved into his second year of music at Humber College here in Toronto on Lakeshore campus. Sean Bertram fell in love with the guitar when he first picked it up at the age of 10. I guess it was a boyhood crush then, really, wasn't it? And not too long after, Sean became infatuated with the craft of songwriting. Sean Bertram says he's thrilled by the subtle nuances of the English language that can so beautifully illustrate swaths of emotion as well as the complexity of the human condition. Holy smokes. You said a lot there, Sean.
It's the definition of poetry, isn't it?
That is poetry. That was poetical. Sean just released his debut album, The Right Place, on all streaming services. These 11 tracks showcase his unique blend of jazz, pop, and rock, woven through stories of love, loss, and finding oneself. Love, loss, and finding oneself. Mm-hmm. That's what life's all about. Sean Bertram continues to pursue his musical goals at Humber College and hone his craft. Welcome back to Song Talk Radio, Sean Bertram.
Thanks so much for having me.
Welcome.
Hey. Welcome. Yeah, so what's changed since you're older now? You're 7 months older.
I'm older, much older.
Yeah, you feel a little more mature now?
No. I feel less mature, actually.
Okay. That's what happened to me.
That's always a step in the right direction.
Yeah. So, second year, Humber, you're majoring in?
In music, on guitar.
Guitar, yeah. So is it, you were saying before the show, it's quite challenging because we had a strike here in Ontario, so you're playing catch-up now?
Yeah, everything's just kind of flipped on its head now. Mm-hmm. Everything's condensed, but it's still so much fun, like still learning incredible things there.
Do you have to play the guitar twice as quickly in order to get to the material? Or?
In some classes,
just double the tempo of everything.
Double tempo.
It is jazz.
There you go. So, tell us about the album. Now, when you were here in July, I know you were putting that together with your dad, Alistair
Bradley.
Alistair Bradley.
Yes.
I remember him. He's been on our show. We should have him back.
We should definitely have him back.
He's pretty cool.
So how's it working with your dad as your co-producer and engineer?
It's incredible. Like in so many ways, because he knows all the songs so well, because I've played them for him and we've workshopped them together. So he knows, like, oh, this will sound good here, this will sound good here. But he's still also my dad.
Yeah. Does he get on your nerves a bit sometimes?
Once in a while. I thought it was really, really good. But sometimes it's like, hey, it's weird because I'm like kind of hiring him to do this job. Right. But he's still my dad.
Right.
So he's still kind of like...
He doesn't do the subservient too well.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
No. He's his own man.
Oh, right. Well, cool. Right.
But he did a fantastic job. I'm so happy.
Oh, that's great. And you're on the same kind of wavelength. The styles are similar. He comes from a background with piano and vocal mainly, right?
Yeah. Although all his influences are kind of my influences because he played me all his music when I was a kid. Like, I grew up on like Billy Joel and Elton John and all those guys. So.
Right. So... what was I going to ask you? So putting the album together, when were you working on the songwriting? Was that been over the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think I wrote the first song when I was like 14.
Which one's that?
On the Fence.
On the Fence. That's a really cool song.
Yeah. I really like that song. It's gone through a lot of progressions over the past few years, but I think that was the first one that I was like really, really happy with.
So this album is how many years worth of writing?
Six years.
Okay. Yeah. So it's the first album. So you've just chosen the best ones over all that period of time?
Essentially. Well, it's just pretty much that I've had enough songs that I'm happy with.
Right. You have lots of songs you don't like.
So many songs.
Yeah.
So well, most good. Songs.
You know, it's always said that the biggest problem most bands have is they have 10 years to do their first album. And then 1 year to do their second album.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to get that many great songs when you've, you know, it takes, if you spend 10 years picking up the best ones, you'll wind up with really, really good songs. Mm. But if you only have one year to do, you got to write a whole bunch of songs in that 1 year.
Right.
To
see, what's
you know,
that called? The sophomore stretch?
Yeah, yes,
the sophomore album. We're living in a world of singles. Like you're a young guy, Sean. Like what prompted you to say, I'm going to do an album? Because I'm sure, like, are many of your peers doing albums?
No, most of the people I know are doing singles and EPs and stuff. But I don't really like that. Like when I like an artist and I buy some of their music, if I just get a single, I want more immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
And even with an EP, sometimes it's like, oh, it's not enough.
Short.
You did something very cool in this album. You've created a flow of the tunes. In fact, there's a couple interstitials you've done there. They're about a minute and 30 or a minute and 20.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes, when you I was listening to it on Spotify last night. Mm-hmm. Sorry, you won't get much money out of that. But so the songs go from one to the other, and one song comes out of it, and there's an echo of that previous song, and then a person trying it on piano and saying, oh, I'll try to do this. And then it goes into a guitar solo, which is really cool, a mood thing with no lyrics, right into the next song. So what was your thinking? Who were you kind of modeling behavior in terms of the creation of an album of that style?
Well, I love like concept albums that like kind of encompass one emotion and kind of like flow from one song to the next. Like we've all heard Dark Side of the Moon.
And well,
like,
of course.
And like how that flows together.
But you were mentioning Daniel Caesar and Anderson .Paak.
Yeah, like
do
those.
Do that too?
Like, yeah, they're more modern influences that have kind of like almost like skits in between a bunch of their songs that kind of encompass the whole emotion of the album. That'd be really cool to incorporate in some of the songs, especially just trying to find a way to connect each song in like a storybook kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
So when you were choosing these songs, then it wasn't necessarily the best songs from the last several years. Was there some kind of a thematic thread that you were trying to tie them all together with?
Not actually. When I was choosing them, I was like, oh, these are just some songs I could put as an album. And then I realized afterwards that it was like, hey, they kind of all have the same similar theme or like a kind of emotion that kind of weaves together.
Okay.
In like the chronological order of my life.
What was
right.
the theme?
In a sense,
what was the driving emotion?
Mostly in intense pain.
And longing.
Emotional.
And longing, yes. Longing. Yes.
Longing.
So have you gotten many sort of tips on songwriting from your father, who's a fine, very fine songwriter himself?
Oh, very, very fine, yes.
So does he kind of give you, did he sort of take your songs and kind of say, well, you know, maybe try a bridge? Or how did his guidance actually work with you?
Well, he's always been kind of like just there to like help me through everything. Like, it helps that like I've listened to his songs and his albums like my entire life, and like he writes really good songs.
I just kind of
model them after that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'll usually wait until my song's like very fine tuned because I don't want him to say anything bad about them.
do you have any songwriters or bands or artists that you listen to and take stuff from that your dad hates?
Not in my songwriting. He doesn't like a lot of the stuff that I listen to nowadays, though. Like, I'm listening to a lot more like hip hop and like R&B stuff, and he's not as big into that.
Right, but you're not really taking songwriting cues from those kind of.
Not yet.
You may move to hip hop on your next album.
Well, who knows? We'll see.
No, never say never.
True.
Now, so Phil's question was a good one. Can you think of a tip that your father gave you at any time since you were 14 that went, oh, that's a good songwriting tip, Dad. I'm going to take that one with me.
Ooh.
Anything like that, or style, or?
I can't think of like any specific thing. He loves bridges, and he's always like, never turn your back on a good bridge. Like a good yeah. bridge makes a good song.
Yeah. Oh, that is so true.
Very true.
So I always find the bridge the hardest thing to write.
Now, what is your approach to doing bridges? I mean, do you go for like a key change, or?
It depends on the song. Like nowadays, I'm much less like technical than I used to be, and I'm more like, oh, what does this song want? Like, what do I hear? Where do I hear it going? But in a lot of senses, I think of like, I think that Paul Simon said, like, whenever he'd write a bridge, he's like, what haven't I done yet? Or like, what chords haven't I used yet? And then try and use it like that.
Oh, the ones that aren't in the song yet.
Yeah.
But they'd be in the same, what's it called?
Is it the key? Well, not necessarily.
Or sometimes take it out of a key.
Like, out of the key. But yeah. That would fit logically or
musically. It's basically something you haven't heard before, whether it's lyrical, chord-based, melody, whatever.
Yeah.
Rhyme scheme. Like, there's so many dimensions, right?
Yeah, you can do the change-up. And I was talking to Sean before because there's the song he's going to perform live. Stay tuned, folks, because in the second half, he's going to do this beautiful song live. I heard something that he could change up in the B section. This is a song with four verses and two Bs.
Yeah, this is my first song that I've written without a bridge.
Yeah, but they have B sections, but they're not choruses. We have a tweet.
We got a tweet in from Sharon. 6 years isn't long. Brian Wilson took 40 years to do Smile and Guns N' Roses.
Brian Wilson Guns took N' Roses how took, long?
Guns N' Roses took 17 years to do Chinese Democracy, I think it's called?
I've never heard of that.
Guns N' Roses.
Brian Wilson took how long?
40 years to do Smile.
He was 40 when he did Smile, probably. But
oh, no, 40 years.
Well, like you're saying, for the first album. But yeah, that's pretty extraordinary.
No,
6 years is a long time for a guy Sean's age.
Well, Smile.
A quarter of my life.
Smile, was Brian Wilson's last album.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Right. So he's been doing it for a long time.
Yeah.
Okay. That wasn't Beach Boys' first album, right?
Oh, no. God, no. Okay. No. They started when they were like 18.
Yeah.
They were
teenagers
and their dad.
And they were just
ripping
them out then.
Yes. Oh, yeah, we also got a tweet in from Janice. Thanks for the shout out, guys.
Hey, Janice.
I'm here in spirit. Keep rocking.
Yeah. Thank you, Janice.
Right. And have a listen to Janice Ho's podcast, the Soul's Work podcast.
Yes, it's
on
excellent.
iTunes and everywhere. Excellent, very intelligent, very deep, philosophical. You might like it, Sean, actually. The Soul's Work podcast with Janice Ho.
Yeah. All about emotional pain.
Yeah.
Nice.
Now, are you still 19?
I'm 20 now.
Oh, so you're
just
20.
Just turned 20.
Oh, you're over the hill.
That's the problem with being 19 is you always grow out of it.
Yeah, it's like any age.
Speaking of which.
Why don't we hear a song?
Yes.
So this one is called Caroline, and I think you wrote this a couple of years ago, right?
I did.
Actually, I heard it 2 summers and a half ago.
Yeah, at Song Studio.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So where did it come from? You want to say anything about it?
This one, I was literally just like, I'm going to write a pop song.
Okay.
Because cool. This is and a pretty funky song.
Yeah.
Right. Now, this is, was this the one, are you especially proud of the bridge here?
I do like the bridge here. Yeah, I had a lot of fun with this. And I went through like, must have been 100 different bridge ideas until I got on this one.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, because I started this song with the hook, and it was just this like, melody that was like in my head for like for a day and like a week.
Was there a real Caroline? I'm just curious about songs about girls. Like, how do you choose the name there, if there isn't a real person?
It was just the syllables worked.
Yeah, yeah.
there was no girl. I'm just like, hey, there's a name that works.
All right, let's take a listen to Caroline.
Her legs up to her neck, hair down to her toes. She can put this under shame and draw poetry from prose. She steers me off my feet and gets me on my back. She's tenderly ferocious, bringing fiction into fact. All I'll ever need is right in front of me. Caroline, my love. Oh, she's my day and she's my night. Caroline, my love. Caroline, Caroline, all my life. Strawberry curls, emerald eyes. She's got candy on her lips and I'm taking a bite. She's dancing in my head every second of the day. She's got me grooving to a music that refuses to fade. All I'll ever need is right in front of me. Caroline, my love. Oh, she's my day and she's my night. Caroline, my love. Caroline, Caroline, all my life. Charged by friction, I'm in shock. We'll never lose this. Just one moment never stops. With just one kiss, all I'll ever need is right in front of me. Caroline, my love. Oh, she's my day and she's my night. Caroline, my love. Caroline, Caroline, for all my life. Caroline, my love. Oh, she's my day and she's my night. Caroline, my love. Caroline, Caroline, for all my life. Caroline, my love.
Caroline by Sean Bertram.
Wow.
His new album.
Deserves applause.
Round of applause for that. The crowd's going crazy here in the studio at CJRU.
And by the way, you can vote for that song on CBC Searchlight.
You can.
Correct?
Yes. Yeah, tomorrow's the last day you can vote.
Tomorrow's the last day.
Do that.
For round one.
Do it.
So a little touch of Earth.
Do it after the show.
A little touch of Earth, Wind, and Fire there. A little bit of cool guitar.
Yeah.
Very nice bridge. So let's since we were talking about bridges before we went to the song, Sean, so what key are we in on the chorus coming into the bridge? We're in B-flat?
Yeah, we're in B-flat.
What, can you play the chords for us, what you're doing?
For the chorus?
Yeah, the chorus.
Yeah, so it's like
B-flat. And
then it's C minor.
Yeah.
Then F9 to B-flat. And then it's like, it's just kind of like a no chord there.
Yeah.
Back to C minor.
C minor.
Then F9 to B-flat major.
And then the bridge goes to?
And then it goes, I kind of walk up to like the D minor 7 for like a C minor 7. It's like, so it goes D minor 7 to E flat major 7.
Yeah.
And then F to G minor 7.
Ooh.
It's like,
and then you repeat that.
Yeah.
So it gives a nice little break from the song's chords we haven't heard before yet in the song, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Okay.
Is that really switching keys?
Well, you could say it goes to like G minor to a G minor center, but it's still part of B flat.
I think sometimes
it's sort of the relative minor, right?
Mm-hmm. I think sometimes it's more useful to think about tonal centers rather than keys. Because you can stay within the key, but you can actually really change the feel of the melody by where you place the center of the melody.
So. And particularly, like you were saying before, if it's a chord within key that you haven't used yet in the song, then that's that. And then that's really if you're going for a contrast, and this bridge is very highly contrasted.
Especially I was thinking mostly about like the rhythm of the harmony too, because in the rest of the song it's just like one chord for one bar, like two bars,
right.
And this is like I try and do two chords per bar, so like all in one bar there, and then
nice.
Right. You know what I want to bring attention to, boys and ladies and gentlemen, is the intelligence of the lyrics.
Yes.
You know, and you wrote this a couple of years ago. Listen to this. I mean, every line has a little surprise. Legs up to her neck. Well, those are long legs.
Yeah.
Hair down to her toes. That's long hair. She can put the sun to shame and draw poetry from prose. Well, this is very kind of literary thing. You think you're very literary here. She sweeps me off my feet, gets me on my back. She's tenderly ferocious, which is a contrast and a conflict, tenderly ferocious, bringing fiction into fact. So you're actually an English major disguised as a music major.
I like to think so, yeah.
You have a real love of words, right?
I do.
You love prose. You like imagery. You like contrasting ideas, right? Candy on her lips, I'm taking a bite. Dancing in my head. Grooving to her music that refuses to fade. And that's a little more something you've heard before. Mm-hmm. But I really like it. And then in your bridge, you say, I'm charged by friction. I'm in shock. We'll never lose this. Just one moment never stops with just one kiss, you hope, right? I'm a lyric writer primarily, so I really like it when people can, you really have, what am I going to say now? It's a very intelligent pop song. And it's not just la la la, I fell in love, and let's go yo yo, let's go out a date. Mm. It's got real, you know, like thought, literate thought to it, which is what I call a smart pop song.
Yeah, it's definitely smart. It's not even that it's like someone may look at this and go, that's pretty clever, but it's not even
clever.
It's just really
intelligent. Yeah.
And like Bruce was highlighting, like the kind of duality of each line, like the neck, the toes, sweeps me off my feet, gets me on my back, so using the body parts, and then tenderly ferocious. I mean, strawberry and emerald, candy, bite. You know, like the kind of tension between those two things. Yeah, yeah, it's visual, but there's also a poetic behind it. In that most of the lines, anyway, have that kind of dual tension.
Yeah,
To them, which
do you
is
think
really
the chorus lines, the chorus lyric, lives up to the promise of the verse?
Yes, because actually. And this is an issue, I think, and I've heard various songwriters talk about this. You can write songs that songwriters love, but the problem is most people find them really annoying. Because,
in what way?
Well, because we really appreciate all that, you know, the delicate line and the way he turned that phrase and he did all this stuff. And to a lot of people, that just kind of washes over them.
Yeah.
So it's actually good to have very, very wordy verses, but then have a chorus which is really tight and very simple because it acts the contrast
between
them.
And it's easier. Whereas when everything is just top to bottom kind of
heavy,
kind of
dense,
wordy, kind of up its own butt. you can do it. I mean, Morrissey could do it, but even towards the end of his career, it gets pretty tiresome because it's hard to do well consistently all the time.
Right.
Whereas he has nice wordy, subtle images through his verse, very tight, very carefully crafted. And then Caroline, My Love, it's much more sing-songy, much more basic, and the contrast works really well, especially for the chorus.
I appreciate that, Phil, because also the chorus is meant to be a release and a lift, right?
Yeah.
So tension through that first chorus, and then a pre-chorus, and then there's that release. You come fairly quickly into your chorus, which is a pop song trope, right, to get there.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it's more legato, and it's simpler, like Caroline, My Love. Where
don't forget
else
the pre-chorus.
Pre-chorus.
You mentioned the
chorus. Yeah, and I mean, it's a really, it's a pre-chorus that's not ashamed of being a pre-chorus.
Yeah.
It says, hey, I'm a pre-chorus. How you doing?
Well,
you
know? it says that to songwriters. But what it does is play the
because it actually breaks, right? It actually breaks the song, right?
Yeah, yeah. So. Play the pre-chorus for us. Like, and what are the chords there for the listeners at home?
Oh, it goes it's C minor, then G minor F, then D minor.
You can just sing it
F's
for
us. Yeah. All I'll ever need is right in front of me.
Yeah. Okay. So it steps out of the tune, and all you know, to me, it's all about tension and release. So what you're doing is, it's kind of like we're getting to the chorus. Just wait, though. I have this little trick for you, and then we expect to hear it again, right? So you hear it a couple more times. It's a very jazzy, cool pre-chorus too.
Oh
right?
Yeah.
I'll ever need.
But you know, the one thing that makes this song is the hi-hat. The hi-hat work is spectacular.
Oh yeah. Yes.
You know, because drums are one of those things that are very subtle. You know, I spent a bunch of years looking at live loops and figuring out why they sounded the way they did and why, you know, and sometimes it's like 5 to 10 milliseconds off of the beat will have a huge effect.
Yeah.
And this, I mean, the song is driven by that hi-hat, you know, and it's like, who's the drummer on that?
Mark Kelso.
Oh, what a master.
Yeah. He's
shout out to Mark Kelso. Nice. All right. Well, it's drummer. What they said about Ringo, right? He had the style and the feel, because the drummer gives the feel, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So this is not loop training. This is a live in the studio playing.
Well, kind of in the studio. Yeah, it was all recorded all separately and then brought together.
Okay, he recorded it and sent it to you, or
and same with the bass player Colin Barrett.
Right.
Yeah, they both just did it like in their respective studios.
I remember when your dad Alistair was on the show, he had this really neat little piano ditty thing that had a very specific type of rhythm, and we were commenting how the drummer really locked into that and made it even groovier, right? So there's always that interplay between the rhythm you're playing on the guitar is going to inform what the drummer's doing, and vice versa.
Well, and it was
right?
easy.
And the bass player.
It was easier with this song because when I was writing it, I was thinking a lot about what the bass was doing.
Yeah,
like the chorus. Like I just wrote a bass line that essentially, and same with the pre-chorus. Like it's just a bass
Sean,
line.
Sean, where did this start? Where did this song start? Did it start with a guitar or the lyric?
It started with just the melody. Like I heard. And then I was like, that'd be cool if like I just doubled that with the guitar. And then so I did that, and then the rest kind of came.
So the chorus came first.
The chorus came first. Pre-chorus came second.
Mm-hmm.
And then the verses.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But the lick came first.
The lick came first, yeah.
The hook.
Boom, 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 the hooky thing, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Somewhat reminiscent of Steely Dan. A little bit more approachable than Steely Dan. But,
yeah, probably.
You know,
I was kind of hearing Stevie Wonder.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah.
And Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Yeah,
so
kind of 70s jazzy pop.
Not that we like to make direct comparisons. Yeah.
No, no, no. They did really well, those people. And
yes.
You'll do well, too.
Yeah.
You know.
And speaking of doing well.
Well, we should hear a little bit about what's coming up soon on Song Talk, Neil.
For those of you just joining us and wondering what the heck this is, you're listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto and streaming live on songtalk.ca. Just hit that big fat play button. Tonight in the studio, we have singer and recording artist Sean Bertram and guitarist extraordinaire. Don't forget, we'd love to hear from you, so please tweet in your thoughts to us at Song Talk Radio on Twitter or via email, feedback@songtalk.ca. We'll share your thoughts in real time. And you can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned on the show on our resources page at songtalk.ca. And coming up on Song Talk Radio in the coming weeks, March the 6th, singer-songwriter and poet, Robert Priest returns to us with some children's songs. He came on last time. Mm-hmm. He had a band.
Well, he had two guitars.
What would you call it? Was that kind of bluesy, folky something?
Blues, folk, funk.
Yeah. So now he's come back.
He's a great artist and poet, and he's done some. He's going to bring back his guitar player, too, which is great.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, he was pretty good. And on March 13th, we have Patrick Ballantyne, one of our regulars, coming back on the show. Songwriter extraordinaire who just dropped an album called Calendar a couple
months
ago.
Yep, he's going to pull apart two of his favorite songs. We're going to do another deep dive like we did with
two of his favorite songs by some other songwriter.
By
right?
another artist, yeah. Yes. Two of his favorite songs.
Yes, this is something we're doing now with some of our more advanced songwriters. They get to have the fun of pulling a song apart and figuring out how it all works.
Yeah, and telling us why they think it's awesome.
And that's so that that you, our valued listeners, can learn from artists other than the artists who are here in the studio.
Yeah, and so far, I mean, the one we did with Blair a few weeks ago where he pulled apart two Beatles songs. You think you know everything about the Beatles, but I learned a ton that night.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the Pain Lane. That's a great episode. If you haven't heard it, definitely open that up and listen to it.
What else is coming up?
If you're in the Toronto area, you can join us at our next Songwriters Meetup. That's on Sunday, March the 25th. It's March next week, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
February's short, but
spring's coming.
Yes, spring is here already.
So it's Songwriters Meetup, right?
Songwriters Meetup, Sunday, March 25th, 1 to 4 p.m. in the Transact Club. That's in the Annex area of Toronto. Mm-hmm. It's free to join on meetup.com and free to attend the meetup. You can stop by songtalk.ca for the link over to meetup.com.
I'll be there.
Yay. I believe I will be there.
That would be great.
It's also my nephew's birthday, so maybe something else going on.
Bring him.
Yeah.
Anyway, he'll have another
one. You might want to drop in. It's a Sunday afternoon. Bring
I'd
a friend.
Love to, yeah.
Yeah, you get to showcase a song if you get there early. You have to get there around 12:30 to sign up. We have about 12 spots to share your song, and it's a very positive, very supportive atmosphere where people bring in their songs. They're from all different walks of life. We have people get up there and read lyrics out loud and say, "I'm looking for a melody." And other people come up with a finished song on MP3 and you go, "Holy smokes, that's really great. That should be on the radio." And then the audience, we invite the audience to give feedback, positive feedback, what they liked. And if they're allowed to do a rewrite with that artist, what would they do?
Yes.
What would they add to the song? We don't say your chorus sucked. We say, if I was to co-write the chorus, I would do this. Yeah. And then the songwriter can say, all right, I'll write that down. I'll try that at home, right, or not.
I feel like the last couple of meetups, the quality of the feedback has been getting better and better. Like, people are really coming up with constructive, useful things.
They must be listening to the show.
They must be listening to the show.
Yes. We have that interplay. Yeah. We have something like 1,300 members over at our Songwriters Meetup, and a lot of regular followers are on this show as well.
Yes. Very good.
So I want to say a couple more things about Caroline.
Sure.
I mean, Sean, you started out this exercise thinking I want to write a pop song, right?
Yeah.
And pop songs, of course, are all about contrast and strong contrast. Because just look at what we were talking about before. You got complex verses lyrically, simple lyrics in the chorus. You've got a melody that changes shape in the chorus. And of course, the harmonic differences, like and the bridge, of course, is another area where there's high, like the contrast lines are really, really strong. And certainly if you're going for a straightforward pop hit, then simple chorus and lots of contrast. Absolutely.
You know, before we move on to the next song, there is something I want to bring up that's been a really interesting conversation, and this came from my book club last night. Is I was talking about my teenagehood, and basically all the artists I know were kind of awash in self-doubt. I mean, that was a big part of being a teenage, and it's something that's sort of plagued me my whole life. So I went actually on the Songwriters Facebook group. Hello, everyone who's listening there. And I asked them, and a lot of people talked about self-doubt and how they deal with it. And if it's been... Now, I know, Sean, you're much younger than us, and we were talking about how young people seem to be a lot more in touch with their feelings than I think people of our generation was.
We weren't allowed to. It was against the law.
I don't even think it even occurred to us.
No, it wasn't even on the radar.
Feelings were for girls, actually.
Yeah.
So how do we all deal with self-doubt, you know, as artists? I think that's a huge thing.
Do you have any self-doubts ever, Sean?
Oh, all the time, especially when I'm writing. Like, whenever you try and write something, it's like, oh, this is awful. This isn't going to go anywhere. And that was way more prominent, like, when I was just started writing, because it was hard to come up with anything that I actually liked. And, like, most times, like, when I'll do, like, a writing session, like, I'll try and, like, schedule, I'll be like, okay, today I'm going to do 2 hours of just trying to write some songs. And I'll be, like, I'll be really sad after, like, 2 hours. I'll just be in this state of, like, wow, I'm all these emotions just, like, washing over me and, like, all the doubt. But it's, like, when you go back to it and you push at it and, like, you try and take even the small idea, even if you don't like it, and just try and crack it into something even, like, the smallest bit good, it makes you feel so much better. And, like... you really can find really great things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to shut off the critic. I mean, there was... this is a part of Julia Cameron's book, The Artist's Way. That's why she suggests writing first thing in the morning when you first get up, because the critic isn't awake yet. And she says in that... what's it called? Limbic state, somewhere between sleep and wakefulness.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's a state where you're able to allow things to flow. It's really the child state, which before you got self-critical, and the child just comes out with something and goes, isn't that great? You know, and who cares? Mm-hmm. To recreate that as an adult, you have to shut off the critic. There's a great book for you listeners out in there in Radio Land, and it's called Taming Your Gremlin. I believe it's Taming Your Gremlin. He calls the inner critic gremlin. It's by Rick Carson, I think it is, and I recommend it to all my clients because you can't, you know, surgically remove the critic because you need it actually at times. Once the song's written, you have to be able to criticize it, like to improve it, right? But it's really not welcome in the beginnings when an idea is just simply a little baby. You need to hold that baby and protect it from the harm of the critic.
Yeah,
because if you have friends around who say, "Well, that's," I played a song for my brother once, and he said, "Well, that's not going to be a hit." Thank you, brother.
Yeah,
and that's why you don't bring songs to your brother.
That's true.
Right. Fair enough.
Yeah, well, I'd love to hear from our listeners how they actually handle self-doubt.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a huge thing that a lot of songwriters, and from the Facebook page, it was huge. This was something that a lot of people deal with.
I hear a theme show.
Because
we could have a show of songs about self-doubt.
Oh, I really doubt it.
It'll never happen. Don't even try.
Anyway, so send us an email at feedback@songtalk.ca and tell us how you deal with
self-doubt as a songwriter.
Yes, because I think we all would help.
Speaking of songwriting, I think I'd like to hear a live song.
Yeah.
Here we have Sean Bertram in the studio. He's brought his beautiful, what kind of guitar is it?
Takamine.
Yeah, it's a Japanese guitar. Anybody know?
Yeah.
It's in pristine condition, even though you've had it a couple of years, I think, right? And you're going to sing a song called I Think Too Much, which is so funny because I can relate to that so much. People have said, you're always in your head and you're talking fast and you're intellectual and all that. Why don't you just slow down and feel something? And I think, why would I want to do that? It's so painful. I think this is a really clever song. It's another smart song. And I think too much. Shall we? All right, here's Sean Bertram with I Think Too Much. This is an unrecorded song.
Unrecorded. Just wrote it a few months ago.
I think I'm falling, but how could I know? I think I might be blind when my eyes are closed. I think I love you, but I'm in no rush, 'cause I think that I think too much. I'm probably just a needle in your haystack heart, and I don't think you've got the time to tear yourself apart. I'd love to be wrong, but when I think I'm in luck, I start thinking that I think too much. All my bags are packed, but I don't know what to do. Should I run away? Or should I run to you? I think I'm dreaming when I answer the phone, and I feel your voice start skipping. My heart beats like stones. I think I misheard you, but I won't interrupt, 'cause I think that I think too much. All my bags are packed, but I don't know what to do. Should I run away, or should I run to you? I think I'm crazy when I step off the train,
You rush into my arms like a hurricane. I start to stutter, but you shut me right up and tell me I don't have to think so much. No, there's no reason I should think so much, unless it's about your love. Now, baby, oh, no longer will I think too much.
Oh, wow. All right.
Brilliant song.
So I'm going to compare you. I don't like to do this, but this is going to be very flattering. Early Paul Simon.
Oh, really?
Oh,
wow.
Absolutely. The intelligence of the lyric and the voice and the phrasing. You think, listen to some of his very early Paul Simon stuff when it was, you know.
When it was him and Garfunkel?
Yeah, but okay. Listen to his early folk songs, which are his songs, you know. And also, it has the feeling of Paul Simon in terms of the chord progressions as well.
Mm-hmm.
But beautiful, beautiful song and a lovely wordplay. Because I think that I think, I start thinking that I think, because I think. Don't, and you tell me I don't have to think so much. There's a progression through the thoughts there, right? Mm-hmm. And I no longer will I think too much. Now, do we have a tweet there?
Yes, we do. Well, I got one in from Janice. What a beautiful voice. Sounds flawless. Great use of dynamics and expression. Amazing job. Thank you, Janice.
Oh, thanks, Janice.
Well, you've got
Janice
a fan
was all about that.
You've got a fan in Vancouver there.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's what I want to try out on you. I was telling Sean earlier, I had an idea for the B section, and it was about the treatment of the guitar. Because it's very hesitant in the verses, da la 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 la, all that, what if you did a chunk, 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 oh my bad, can you just try that? So you're coming out,
like,
I start thinking that I think too much from there.
Oh my bad. Are packed, but I don't know what to do. Should I run away or should I run to you?
And toss it. I think I'm dreaming. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
feel
cool.
So that, I think what I wanted the B section to do is to give us a relief from the choppy guitar. Although it was very, everything's very tentative. It's a reflective song. I think too much. Like, it's totally thinking, right? And I thought for a relief in the B section, it's just let it walk a bit. And I would have a speaking of hi-hat, something to move it along.
It's an interesting idea. I think the idea is doing that kind of
contrast.
Yeah, I mean, there's contrast. I think that kind of chord thing pulled it too much from the style, just a little bit.
But
so finding something kind of a...
I have an in-between suggestion.
Okay.
You do the loose chords like you're doing before, but you are an expert at inserting little bass line thingies. So you could use a bass line on the E string to kind of give it that pulse without giving it a chunk.
At Song Talk Radio, we're not afraid to use very complicated terminology like baseline thingy.
Right. What do you mean by baseline thingy? So try that on the bridge then. Pull in a bass then. Oh my bass.
Yeah, I can try that. Yeah.
Oh my bass packed, but I don't know what to do. Should I?
No, I think you mean something different.
Walk the bass a little bit more. So, like, strum the one
and hold it.
I don't know if you can hold it and then as well. Strum. You're using all your fingers there, man. But
yeah,
like a strum.
That could be cool.
Strum, boom, 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 strum.
Nice. That would give it a nice.
Yeah,
jazz
that's
feel.
An interesting idea.
Yeah,
it's very kind of Beatles.
So what we're
way.
Talking about, listeners at home, is providing enough of a contrast to know we're moving into a new section to give the listener a release and a lift from. Now, you're not calling that chorus, you're calling it a B section, which is fine, but it serves the same purpose. It's like, you know, in those gourmet meals they serve you a sorbet between each course to cleanse the palate. No, but seriously, because if you going down a road on a song, if you take a detour, what I call stand on the side of the road and wave, and then you come back and get in the car and drive, they want to get back in the car. Like, that's when you come back to the thing they already are loving, but you wait, you know, wait, and you, in other words, you've got to take them away from the song to bring them back.
You know, one thing I thought was really interesting is your third line, because your approach to the lyric, to the chords, you had lots of chord movement in the third line, but the very often the vocal kind of was in contrast to it. It was a really tasty little bit, you know?
Give us an example. What do you mean? I think I love you, but I'm in no rush?
Yeah, well, I mean, the chords that he was playing underneath it. I mean, that's a. I mean, it's a beautiful.
I actually wanted to point that out as well, because there seemed. I actually thought there was a more of a congruence with the melody.
It was great.
It was really cool, because it's kind of like your verse is an AABA in terms of the chord movement.
But if you listen to if you listen to the melody isn't chasing those chord changes. The melody is sort of happening, and then the chord changes are underneath it.
Can you sing that line?
It's almost like when you, like, if you ever play with a real trained jazz sideman, and you're doing standards, they'll just have, like, you know, like 1-4-5, and they'll do all these like wonderful chord walking, and it kind of reminded me of that, you know.
Yeah, well, let's hear.
And you sang it and played it.
Let's hear the first verse and listen for the third line here, folks.
I think I'm falling, but how could I know? I think I might be blind when my eyes are closed. I think I love you, but I'm in no rush.
Nice.
Because I think that I think too much.
Yeah, it's like
beautiful.
It would be really easy to follow that, like, the, like, change, you know, the note right on top of it.
Yeah.
But in the second, I think in the second or the third verse, it's, you're actually almost completely detached from those chord changes, but it's just beautiful. It works so well.
Thank you so much.
I mean, it's like a jazz sideman.
Yeah, I think you're right, Phil, in that there's a detachment in terms of the minutiae of the melody versus the chord change. But on a larger scale, for lines 1, 2, and 4, you're changing the chord on every half measure, so every half note. But in there, you got the rhythm of the melody, and the rhythm of the chord change is actually like it's chord change per syllable.
Yeah,
almost.
Right?
Yeah,
which is pretty cool.
You did that by design, but more instinctively, you think, rather than.
Well, that's just like something I heard, because I needed more motion at that point, because it was like it starts to get a little stagnant if you just keep playing that same harmonic rhythm.
Yes.
So just like giving it that little bit just like builds it towards, especially that chord.
And why put it on the third line as opposed to the second and fourth or something like that? Like,
because it's perfect.
Because it's perfect there.
But why is it? Why is that perfect? I agree that that's perfect, but how come that's perfect?
There wasn't any specific reason. It was mostly just because the rhythm of the melody worked there too. Like,
da,
da, da, da.
There's actually
so
a
it kind of falls on every chord note kind of thing.
Right.
There's
right,
actually
okay.
it's actually there's a classical approach is when you set up a melody, you need to repeat the melody enough times for it to become a pattern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like you can only vary from a pattern once you've established a pattern.
So
if you put it in the two, there's no real sort of contrast.
Right.
You put it at the four, you're kind of building up to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
You're like it's more of a tag.
Yeah, it's
whereas
more of a tag where you're leading into the next section.
So on
then.
The third, it's like a classical classical variation.
Classical music.
Sometimes it's really fun just to listen to some classical music like you know, Bach, Beethoven, those big guys, and just really like listen to the melody. Like there's so much happening, but really focus on the melody and you pick up all these little things about how they do variations, and it's a really interesting approach of where you do those variations.
Yeah.
You know, like do you like especially like I always like variations in a verse melody, but I'm never sure if you should do it in the second verse so that you repeat the verse melody in the last one, or if you do the change in the last verse.
I'd
like to point out the lyric quality again.
Okay,
you had no idea your songs were this good, did you? People come on our show and they go, I had no idea it was this deep. But I think you know that you are. I might be blind when my eyes are closed. Lovely. I'm probably just a needle in your haystack heart. Okay, I've never heard that before. You took the needle in a haystack and turned it around, right? So a message to all you songwriters are there. It's not like you can't use cliches, but I would say turn them around so that they're more interesting, right? And I'd love to be wrong, but when I think I'm in luck, I'm not right. I'm in luck, which is really cool. I think I'm dreaming when I answer the phone. I feel your voice start skipping. My heart beats like stones. Her voice is skipping your heartbeats, which is really cool. I think it's just... And the only image I didn't like, you rush into my arms like a hurricane.
Oh, I love that.
You like that?
Oh, sweet. That's great.
Okay. I guess it's been a long time for
me. We got an email from Damien from Kitchener. Hi, Damien. Thanks for listening.
Hey, Damien.
Sean has a John Mayer sound. Mm. Ask him about Funking Around.
Is that a band?
No, it's...
Sounds like an in-joke.
Yeah, it's like an inside joke.
But is there a guitar piece that goes with Funking Around?
Oh, I wouldn't remember it.
Okay.
I'm sure he has a video of it somewhere, but it's...
Oh, is this when you were doing
Damien
something
send
crazy?
Send us the link and we'll share it on Twitter.
So yeah. I really like the line, and you rush into my arms like a hurricane.
Oh, yeah.
Only because of the... Again, it's about that contrast, right? I mean, it's not normally how you think of a hurricane, but to me, that's poetry.
You don't
right?
think it's too much?
No. I don't know.
I like it better than Rocking Me Like a Hurricane.
Yeah, like Rocking Me Like a Hurricane seems to be a little more congruent.
Yeah.
Whereas this is, yeah.
Yeah.
She almost knocks you off your feet. Is that the idea?
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
like,
if you knew who it was about, it'd make sense, too.
Oh, it's about somebody. Do you want to mention any names?
Not tonight.
So it's that thing where the woman jumps into your arms and you spin her around and almost knocks you over and you go, oh my God, she's so glad to see me. You have
sometimes
that every
it can
night,
be,
Neil, with your wife,
yes,
right?
Yes,
sometimes
yes.
that can also be an emotional thing, like when someone comes into you and that experience is
like
a hurricane.
Yeah, it's like a hurricane.
Right.
I mean that you're swept off your feet. And
which is why you said like a hurricane.
Property damage and everything.
And you start to stutter because you're nervous and she says, shut up. You don't have to talk.
Yeah, I think we've all had those relationships which you wind up with like a missing roof and a lot of property damage.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Oh.
So, Sean, you got this section at the end called Tag.
Yeah.
Is that a repeat of like half the verse kind of thing?
It's a completely new set of chord changes.
It is.
Tell us what the chords are.
Just repeating the chords.
What key is the song in?
It's an E-flat.
Okay, and what are you doing in the tag?
I go A-flat to A-flat minor 6. An A flat over G, and then it's a G flat diminished chord to an F minor
thing.
Yeah. And then F minor 7, and then B flat 11.
Oh, tasty! I love jazz chords.
You know, it's they take time to learn, but they're worthwhile because they give you so many voicing possibilities.
So is the tag then in lieu of the bridge? Because you said it's like the one song you have that doesn't have a bridge, but
it's true.
In any case, it's a third section of the song.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not in the location that a bridge typically is in. It's sort of a bridge at the end of the song.
Yeah. Well, it was like it was the only thing I needed left to say. I had left to say that was like, oh, I won't think anymore too much.
Yeah, you wanted to close the song off.
Yeah.
Because I guess all the thinking was doubting the love.
Mm-hmm.
The girl. So now she's there, she's running to your arms like a hurricane, and say, there's no reason I should think so much unless it's about your love. No, baby. How did you get so cool? I wish I was cool at his age. I was a geek. I couldn't say stuff like that. But you can say it in a song. Maybe you can't actually say it in real life.
I probably wouldn't say that in real life.
No, you wouldn't have the nerve. Okay, that's cool.
If I can make a quick suggestion about this song, Sean, the second B part is lyrically the same as the first B part.
Yeah.
And if you're moving towards that tag at the end where...
There's
a little more resolution. There's a little more certainty. Then I would play with the lyrics in the second B part because you're not expressing it as a chorus. It doesn't have to be the same,
right?
You can twist it a little bit, and it could be a subtle thing where it's just a hint more,
just a word or two here,
just a word
and there
or two that makes it a little more certain. Like all my bags are packed, but I don't know what to do. You know, my bags are packed. I know.
I'm waiting for you.
Should I go with you? Like ruminating, kind of, but moving closer to.
Yeah, moving closer to that.
Just a step closer to that.
Yeah.
That's what I felt too. Because those are the only repeats in the whole song. That one repeat is the only repeat in the whole song lyrically, right?
Mm.
So you could go the whole distance and have a song with no lyric ever repeated, which. People would say, well, that's not a pop song, but it's actually a beautiful
a
jazz song.
I mean, and that sort of thing is appropriate for this kind of song, the way you've set it up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful jazz tune. So you're studying jazz guitar at Humber then?
I am, yeah.
Okay. Who's your teacher? Would you like to give a shout out to a great teacher out there?
Ted Quinlan.
T. Ted Quinlan.
Ted Quinlan.
You're doing fine work, Ted.
Can you share very quickly the last thing you learned on guitar?
Oh, there's like so much. But there's like chords you can play that are like really cool that are like up here. That are like all jazz.
He's up on the like the 12th and 13th fret.
Yeah.
It's always a really cool like voicings that don't have the root in them.
Right.
You play like an F chord that doesn't have an F in it. It's like,
you didn't have a guitar with a cutaway.
Do we have time, Phil, for a quick falsetto comment?
No, sure.
I remember I have this thing against falsetto, and only because...
Against?
No, well, it's... Use it in the right place. It's fine. Right. I think it's totally appropriate in these B sections. But in other parts of your album, I wanted you to hit the note solidly at the top of your range and let the guts and the heart come through, right?
The thing is, I don't have a big range.
No, but you could probably sing a B or a C or a D, right? Just below the top
those.
E, right?
Like these. Like.
What's your top note?
Maybe an E.
Let's hear it. My bags are packed.
That'd be so loud.
Yeah, well, anyway, we have to wrap up now. The band's here.
For next time.
Anyway,
for next
we'll
time,
talk I'll about falsetto. It. I just think that falsetto takes power from emotional power away rather than adds it to it. Adds a subtlety and a sensitivity.
But this song's not about power necessarily.
No, I'm talking about his other songs on the album. We'll talk.
We'll talk.
What are we doing here? Well, we have to wrap up now. It's all the time we have. This is Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil. We'd like to thank our guest, Sean Bertram.
Thank you so much for having me.
And his new album, which is called?
The Right Place.
The Right Place. And you are in the right place.
You can download it on
all those.
Apple Music, Google Play, Spotify.
You can buy it. Send us your impressions via Twitter at Song Talk Radio, email feedback@songtalk.ca, Facebook, and YouTube. We're everywhere. Song Talk Radio. Or stop by the site, songtalk.ca. Please subscribe to the Song Talk Radio podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or at Stitcher.com. And please give us a review because that moves us up in the ratings.
Yes.
And why not? And we deserve it. And the resources page is at songtalk.ca/resources. If you're in the Toronto area, one more shout out for Songwriters Meetup. Sunday, March 25th from 1 to 4 at the Transact Club. Free to join on meetup.com. Free to attend the meetup. Stop by songtalk.ca/meetup for all the juicy details. Thank you, CJRU. CJRU. I got that almost right. CJRU 1280 AM for putting up with us. We have the wonderful Michael Newton, technical director. The lovely Alyssa Matthews, program director. And we'd like to thank Linda Lavender for taking care of social media channels tonight. She'll be back on the board next week.
First time on Twitter ever.
And keeping us on track. And Phil Emery for taking care of the board tonight. Double duty.
One minor screw.
And most of all.
We didn't hear it.
I didn't hear it. Most of all, we'd like to thank you, the home listeners, wherever you listen around the world. So you can follow Neil at
neilmodi.com.
Phil at
the Phil Emery.
Linda at
lindalavender.com.
And Bruce at bruceherrett.com. And Sean at
You can look at me on Facebook at Sean Bertram or on Instagram, seanbertram.music.
And that's seanbertram.music.
And don't forget to vote for Sean's song, Caroline.
Yes.
On CBC Searchlight.
Oh, just go to cbc.ca/searchlight and find that. And please reply to, or stop by our website at songtalk.ca to browse past shows and find out how you could be a guest on our show. Bye-bye.
Keep on writing.
Good night, everyone.